Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Richard Rossi Live.
I don't mean to bother you, Doc, but it's a mystery to me why it took so long to get this show on the air. It certainly ties up all the loose ends with Christian talk. Gee, my wife just loves this show, Doc.
Today I'm really excited. As you know, we've had some tribute shows to Peter Falk, and we have his daughter coming on here, and after about 20 seconds, we'll be back with Catherine Falk to discuss her father, as well as a very important bill named after him, the Peter Falk bill, that will allow those of us that are having aging parents have our rights to see them. So we'll be back in about 20 seconds with Catherine Falk live. Welcome to Richard Rossi Live, and welcome, Catherine.
Hi. Hi, how are you?
Oh, we're wonderful, and we're so grateful you came on.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Yeah, we did a few shows in tribute to your dad and his work, and we had people from all over the world calling in, and it was really something, some of the fan clubs in other countries. We love Columbo as well as his many other films. What are some of your favorite memories of him growing up?
Well, I probably repeat myself a lot, but there's so many wonderful memories. But really, the best memory is just that my dad was really, he was a character. I mean, he was funny. He was really, he looked at life in a very humorous way. And he never intended to be funny, but he just was. And so he always had us in stitches. I mean, we used to go to the gay parade in Hollywood every year when I was in high school, and you know, like it was just fun. And so all of these people dressed up in costumes would come sit on my dad's lap with their big giant fake breasts, and my dad would laugh. And I mean, we had a good time, you know. And my dad, you know, he made jokes about his eye all the time, because you know, I think he looked at it, and you know, as a way of turning it from a tragedy into something that could be more comical, you know. So I think most of my memories were just around his driving, his really bad driving habits, and how he always felt like he had to keep an eye on us, literally, in the back seat of the car. And he drove this old beat-up Mercedes, and my sister and I were always terrified, you know, getting in a car with him, because his right eye was his glass eye and his left eye was his good eye. So he would literally, like, have to turn his whole head around to make eye contact with us, and we'd always be like screaming, like, you know, and we'd end up on sidewalks, we'd end up at fire hydrants, he got pulled over by police all the time. I mean, it was a wild ride with my dad, and I look back on it now and it was really funny, but back then I think I was a little terrified, you know.
Well, it sounds like so much of him was in the character. My wife and I watched a Columbo on what station shows it? MeTV on Sunday night. I think it was last Sunday night.
Yeah, MeTV. I watch it all the time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there was a scene in the one Sunday night where his bad driving drove the other guy. I think it was played by Larry Storch, the driving instructor, was like, "Just let me out of the car." So much of him was in this. I got to meet your dad and spend a little time with him, and I remember him telling a story when he was a boy, and I think he was playing baseball, and they did a real bad call on him and called him out.
He took the eye out. Yeah, he wasn't a boy. He was actually older, and my mom said that when he was rounding third base and coming into home plate that the umpire called him out, and my dad got really upset, and he popped his eye out, and he opened the hand of the umpire and put it in his hand and said, "You need this eye more than I do." Yeah, it's a great story.
Yeah.
And he used to play a lot of practical jokes on people, like put his eye in somebody's, you know, glass of wine or something, and they go to drink. And I mean, I was like grossed out by it, but it was quite funny. You know, now I look back on it, all the eye stories of him, you know, and the practical jokes were really cute. You know.
Yeah, I think his humor was a good coping mechanism. He never let it stop him. You know, I remember him also talking about early on some big studio guy telling him, you know, I can, for the same money, get an actor with two good eyes. And so
he
dealt with some really real rude, crude kind of behavior, but he sure won with his talent. So this bill that has emerged from your own struggle is really relevant to a lot of us baby boomers. In fact, coincidentally, Catherine, I was on the phone yesterday with a dear friend of mine named Catherine as well, whose father just passed from Alzheimer's. So, and my dad passed as well about the time yours did. So a lot of us are facing parents getting older, and you never intended to be this, you know, political crusader, but this came out of your own struggle to see your dad as he got Alzheimer's when he got older. Is that how it started to emerge, kind of organically from your own battle?
Yeah, I mean, basically, you know, what happened was my sister and I, back in 2009, you know, we just, we had plans to see my dad for Father's Day. We had made all these arrangements and had dinner plans, and he was going in for hip surgery, and like 2 days after Father's Day, he was due in for surgery. And we were concerned because he was obviously experiencing dementia, and we knew he had early onset Alzheimer's. I mean, his dad died, his own father died from Alzheimer's, and he watched that. And I said to my dad on the phone before Father's Day, I said, I'm really concerned the anesthesia is really going to affect your brain. It's going to accelerate, you know, the dementia. We were worried. And he just, you know, he's like, I got to do this. My hip is, you know, I can't walk. It's so hard. And so anyway, Father's Day came and went, and we couldn't find him. I mean, we couldn't. He disappeared. And I knew something was wrong. And so my sister went to the hospital the day he was scheduled for surgery, and the hospital said he was in and out of surgery on Father's Day. Somebody had moved up his surgery date, and we knew exactly what happened. And I immediately went into panic mode, and I went to an attorney and said, I need access to my dad. Something's wrong. And he said, the only way to do this is to go into probate court. And I said, well, why do I have to go into probate court? I just want to go see my dad. I just want to talk to my dad. And he said, because that your father is older, and because he is married, and because, you know, that's just the way it works. We have to go into probate court and try to sway the judge to let you have visitation. And there's no visitation laws on the books to allow you access, so you have to file a conservatorship. And I said, but I don't want a conservatorship. I don't want to spend a year in court doing that. And he said, that's the only way. It's the only legal in to get in there to do this. I was shocked. And it costs hundreds of thousands of dollars to do this. And most people in America don't have that type of money to do that. So people just, you know, have no options. And so when I was in court in 2009 in Los Angeles, I turned to my previous probate attorney, and I said, we need to develop a bill. We need to create a visitation, adult visitation bill, and name it the Peter Falk bill, and can you draft this for me? And so he did. He wrote it. And so I just figured that this might help streamline the process so that people don't have to move for conservatorship and put somebody under guardianship that doesn't need to be put under guardianship. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I guess some of the legal terms for our listeners, a conservatorship is where you're legally their guardian, and probate court, a lot of times, I think, deals with wills and estates. And you were like, why do I have to go through all this? I just want to see him. So this bill would, and correct me if I'm wrong, Catherine, but this bill is a visitation bill that would enable someone in that situation to just basically just have the right to see their dad. Is that correct?
Right. It's a petition that you fill out the form and you go into court and you file it, and it gives adult children access to their parents without having to file for conservatorship and guardianship, which just is a whole Pandora's box nightmare. I mean, look, truthfully, in a utopia, I wish it was in family law. I wish that a visitation bill existed for adult children the way in family court exists for minor children and grandparents. It really is a systemic problem, and it's a family problem. And I really wish it was out of probate court altogether, because, I mean, I'm just being honest with you, probate court is very corrupt. There's a lot of stuff that I'm not going to get into, but it's really a place you don't want to visit. And so this visitation bill, even though it's still in the probate courts, it allows an adult child much more rights to just, you know, getting this done quicker without having to expend enormous amounts of money and heartache to do this. And it's sad that we even have to file a petition to see our parent. It's ludicrous. It's crazy in America that you can't just go knock on your dad's door and gain access. And it's unfortunate that the person that's isolating your parent doesn't have the burden of proof of why they're restricting access to other family members. The burden of proof should be on them, because it seems like an innate right for an adult child to have access to their parent when they're in their final stages of their life. Unless my dad specifically said, hey, I don't want this child around me, which he didn't do. He didn't do that. If he had, you know, I mean, look, if he had said, look, I don't want my children around me, we would have respected that, you know?
Mm-hmm. And but for those of you listening, I want you all to support this and share your own stories. And you can like Catherine's Facebook page. I literally just liked this page a few seconds ago. It's facebook.com/Catherine Falk Organization. And Catherine spells her name with a C, A-T-H-E-R-I-N-E. And also your website, CatherineFalkOrganization.org.
Bill is like sweeping across America. I mean, I literally 2 days ago, Assemblyman Dancer out of New Jersey, he saw me and he on Fox News. I had already been working with legislators in New Jersey. He literally took it upon himself to draft this bill, and he's naming it after my father in New Jersey. And it's in New York, it's in Arizona, it's in Utah, and they're all naming it after my dad.
That is so awesome. So I know it started in California with your fight, and then I think it started to get some traction in New York, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been working with New York legislators for a year now. It's been pretty arduous in New York. You know, New York moves at a different pace.
Uh-huh.
But my dad was born and raised in New York, and so I have so much love and compassion for trying to, you know, New York is just a place I want it to pass for my dad. I really do. And for everybody in New York. New York really needs this bill, you know, and I've gotten thousands of letters from New York supporters, New Jersey supporters, and it's a real epidemic in this country, you know, the isolation that's going on, and it's really a form of elder abuse, you know?
Yeah, because isolation is so, I think, so damaging because, you know, we all need love and we all need our families, and
yeah,
it's really scary when any kind of court or you know, organization can come between those just primal relationships and say, oh, sorry, I mean, it's just so unnatural. And you must have had just, oh, my God, I could imagine being in your shoes feeling just so many things, resentful, angry. But you
took this. You know what, can I tell you something? As an adult child, you never think you're going to be faced with having this conversation with your parents. Like, hey, by the way, if you marry 5 or 8 or 15 times, can you, in your power of attorney or in your healthcare proxy, can you please put in a provision that we'll always have visitation rights to you? Like, you don't think ever that you're going to have that conversation. But unfortunately, with the divorce rate being as high as it is and the epidemic that's going on, I mean, look, I'm friends with Travis Campbell, and his dad is in a facility, and we speak every day, and he has no access to his father. He can only see his dad twice a month, and it's like on a supervised visit, and it's just for the older kids. So the children of the fourth wife can have unlimited access, but the children previously have very little access to no access at all. And so that's a problem, you know? So we're working with different legislators in these states to really recognize that this something has to be done.
That's a really good point you raise, is that our listeners who have parents that have, you know, multiple marriages, which I think is usually part of the story with some of the other cases we've heard about, like Mickey Rooney, Casey Kasem, some of these.
Oh, yeah.
So what happens, you know, hypothetically, and, you know, I guess the most egregious, you know, example that people joked about was Anna Nicole Smith, the playmate marrying this guy in his 80s, and then the kids fighting over with her and stuff. I guess when someone, let's say, is older and, quote-unquote, hypothetically falls in love with some young woman, and, you know, and I'm so happy and this is my soulmate, and when they seem to be in their right mind, give that person a lot of the power, that pretty much can shut out the kids from a prior marriage unless this is in place. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct, and I think what this visitation bill to me exemplifies is that there is no desire for push to gain money or monetary compensation. This isn't about money. This isn't about gaining the estate. This is just to preserve and protect the relationship between a parent, an adult parent, or somebody under guardianship or a relative who's being isolated unfairly so by another relative. It could be, you know, I mean, I have friends of mine. Look at Misty Davis in Iowa. Her brother was disabled, and he was under guardianship with a stepmother. Her dad had died, and the stepmother took guardianship over her disabled brother, and she didn't have access to her brother anymore. So this one woman in Iowa pushed for legislation, and now in Iowa there's a visitation bill because of this girl, SF 306. And so now she's filing this petition, and she's going in to get visitation with her brother. So it's not really about an ailing parent just with an adult child. It really encompasses a much broader context of family members. You know what I mean?
Wow, that's really interesting. So it can be a sibling situation as well. And I think that in her case that it connected to some of the parent issues. I think maybe one of Casey Kasem's kids supported her or something. So these two type of situations have the same legal parallel then.
Yeah, Misty Davis basically initiated this. She found the senator. She found a lawyer to author the bill. She introduced 306 at the same time a different foundation introduced 360. 360 just died right at the first level, but her bill really pushed through. And yes, that foundation helped promote it, but this one woman out of Iowa was she spearheaded it, and she is so grateful, you know. And it really takes. Unfortunately, it takes celebrity children to be the voices of many voices that are not being heard. And you know, Travis Campbell, myself, you know, Mickey Rooney. I mean, I'm friends with a couple of Mickey Rooney's daughters. We're all the voices, hopefully, to help other people out. You know, I mean, anything that we can do to help, we will.
Yeah, I remember they showed a film I directed at SAG, and they had a party for the different speakers at the Guild that year. And so I was at this party with Mickey Rooney and some other people. And I remember Mickey was starting to get, a little bit out of it. And then it was sad to see. I guess there were some allegations where people were even taking some of the money.
No, I mean, so look, here's the deal. I mean, I'm friends with Carrie and Kimmy Rooney. There are two daughters from the fourth wife. He was married 8 times, so the scenario looks like this. You have 8 wives, 8 children. The last wife, the 8th wife, she has her own children from a completely different husband. Those children drop their last name and assume the Rooney last name, and really all of his money, the father's money, disappeared. And Mickey turned to Carrie Rooney, a friend of mine, you know, and said, I'm being abused. Like, this is not good here. And she couldn't take him out. She couldn't remove him. And she said, Catherine, I was in there. He was complaining to me, and I didn't know what to do for my father. And then she didn't have access to him anymore. And this is really a problem. I mean, 8 wives, 8 children, you know what I mean?
Well, it's wonderful how you've taken something bad, and like the good book says, something bad can be turned around for good, because you're going to, with this bill, and take the suffering you've been through and help so many other people. You know, it's a tremendous. I mean, you could have just licked your wounds, but you're really being proactive here and getting the support of a lot of politicians. And I would want to say bipartisan support, because we're in such a polarized time.
Politically,
it's so polarized with the extreme right, the extreme left, and.
Can I tell you something? There is so much bipartisan support. It is so refreshing to see, like, Senator Wyler from Utah. I mean, you know, conservative state. And, you know, it's really not about political lines at all. It's about family systems approach and recognizing that this is an epidemic that affects everybody's family, no matter what political line you fall under. You know what I mean? And I have so much support in Arizona and Utah. I was actually kind of surprised, because I'm a Democrat, and I thought, okay, I'm going to hit the blue states. You know, I really did. I mean, I'm being blunt with you, but I thought, okay, I'm going to hit the blue states because they might be more receptive. And surprisingly, the red states are incredibly supportive, and they're all supportive, you know?
Yeah, what I was thinking, because the conservatives are, you know, a lot of times worried about, an entity, government or some other entity, interfering in their lives. So that part of it, I think, would really appeal to them. Look, do you want a court to come in and, you know, keep you, divide parent and child? So this is something I could see. It's getting this momentum. And it's bill, is it 2034? What's the official name of the bill that you have, the visitation bill?
You talk about New York. I don't know the bill number offhand in front of me. I don't have all the bills in front of me, but you're talking about New Jersey or New York?
I guess the one that I had a note here, AB 2034. Well, I guess there's a couple different ones, because Ronald Dancer introduced it in New Jersey. So it's the same basic bill, but it's just that it's coming in other states now. You're getting momentum in a bunch of other states, huh?
Right, right. So Assemblyman Dancer, yeah, he gave it a number. All the bills have to have a number attached to them. And so what he did is he's amending it to name it after my father because he was so moved by my dad. And so same as New York, too.
Well, I know your dad's really proud of you and looking down and just so proud of you because he was a fighter. You know, he overcame the so many things to become the great star that he was. He didn't give up when people made fun of him with his glass eye, and he laughed about it, and he took the lemons and, you know, made lemonade. And you've taken something here that is so painful.
Can I tell you something? When I was in court, it was the hardest time, and I'm not kidding you, it was the hardest time of my life. I was so emotional, and I couldn't believe I had to go through that. I couldn't believe that an adult child had to sit in trial for 6 months and justify and explain and prove that there was a relationship at all. You know, most families have problems. I mean, I fought with my dad. I had a huge falling out with him when I was at Syracuse University, but we made amends. I mean, families mm-hmm. have pitfalls and they have things that happen, but I to be isolated away from my dad, and it wasn't just me, it was my sister, it was my mom. My mom and my dad were best friends. My mom read his scripts throughout his whole life. He always gave my mom his scripts to proof them and to give the thumbs up or the thumbs down, and she just was devastated. She was like, I can't reach your father. Nobody could reach him. Nobody from New York could reach him. So he became isolated from people that really wanted, who had been in his life for many, many years. Very sad, you know? And it just seems like, you know, with somebody with Alzheimer's or anybody getting on in age, you know, if you look up Alzheimer's and you understand it the way I studied it, they really need consistency and affection and that type of human interaction, human touch and emotional connectedness, you know? I mean, that's what I've read.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense because it also reminds them of what's familiar. And you mentioned your friendship with, I think it was Travis Campbell. And
right.
One thing I took away from that film was that even as Glenn Campbell couldn't recognize certain things, the music was still there. He still could play very well because of that part of his brain was so familiar and so developed. And so to take away those familiar reinforcing people that reinforce those deep, deep ties of familiarity, it would seem to me could accelerate the decline.
Yeah, and that's the movie I thought was a complete debacle, but I'm not going to get into it. I mean, Travis was devastated by that movie. But, you know, look, Debbie Campbell, his eldest daughter from the first marriage, she toured with Glenn for 20 years, and then she was fired off of the tour, touring with him before they started the movie. She was fired. And so Glenn getting on stage like that and filming for 150 days without his daughter by his side with all this unfamiliar, you know, all this movement going on stage without the consistency of what he was used to, of course anybody would melt down, especially suffering from Alzheimer's. And Debbie was his right hand. I mean, she was with him on the tours, and she was fired. And so that was, you know, probably a piece of that was very devastating to Glenn, you know, just that, you know, I don't know. It's very sad. The whole thing is sad.
I guess it's hard to know, you know, how to read the minds of a lot of these other people, but I'd be curious your speculation on, you know, wonder what motivates the isolation. Is it mercenary? Is it the insecurities of people that they're threatened by the relationship with the prior? Like, I knew a woman that married a guy and was so insecure that she was threatened by his closeness with his daughter from a prior marriage. And I was thinking, this is nuts. I mean, I have a very close relationship with my adult daughter, and it's the greatest, healthiest thing in the world. But then sometimes the new family is threatened by that closeness. I mean, what do you have any speculation on what motivates the kind of isolation in these cases that happen?
I do. I really do. You know, I have a master's in psychology, so it helps to give me a little bit of insight. And also, I've experienced it firsthand, and I think, you know, it depends. I think there are a lot of great step parents that are out there, and I'm not speaking and generalizing about all of them, but many marriages encompass a motivation to remarry based on fame and notoriety and money and greed. And a lot of our parents marry, you know, spouses that are 20, 30 years younger than them, and so there's a real generational gap. I look at people's intentions. And I look at what happens. I mean, look, the isolation for my sister and I, it started so early on. We saw it. I mean, we weren't allowed in the house. Not by my dad, but by his wife. We weren't allowed in the house. Whenever he tried to make phone calls to us at home, there was a lot of screaming going on in the background. We were really, the isolation began too early, and we were only 6, 7, 8 years old. I mean, we didn't do anything wrong at that point, you know what I mean? You couldn't say an 8-year-old could be responsible for doing anything at that point, you know? So I really believe that there's a lot of insecurities, there's a lot of jealousy, there's a lot of greed, a need to control, a state of panic. I think that they worry that, oh my gosh, you know, my motivations might be found out. And also they worry about the money. Are these children coming back to get the money? But I went into court and said, drop any move for me to get any possession over the estate. I said to my attorney, I said, I want no part of that. I don't want to file conservatorship over the estate at all. If I'm going to have to file conservatorship, it's over the person because that's my only way in. And then the judge looked at me and she said, I'm going to grant you visitation at my discretion, but there's no law in place to enforce this. So she was kind of shocked too, you know. And she looked at me and she said, I've never had an adult child come into a courtroom asking for visitation and not wanting conservatorship. So, again, I think that there is a real jealousy that goes on that starts really early and a need to control. And it's just devastating, you know.
So I
see this across the board because why else would a step-parent allow their own children unlimited access to the father or to the parent, and then all the preceding children have no access or have forced supervised visitation? Explain to me why Glenn Campbell's previous marriages, all of his children, don't have the same visitation rights as the fourth wife's children. Tell me why Mickey Rooney's eighth wife, with her own children, had unlimited access over the estate, over the person, and all of the previous marriages, all of those children had no access to their father. Yeah, the common denominator is the step-parent that's currently married and the motivations behind that step-parent. That's my belief. It can't be all of us children that are doing something wrong. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it really, I guess in a way, my mind makes a analogy or a parallel to, it's like fighting for custody of a child, really, you know, where sometimes a parent has to really fight to be able to see their kid in a, well, in our closing couple minutes, Catherine, what can we do to support you, to support the bill, to make this the law of the land so that, you know, another adult child with an incapacitated parent or sibling?
Yeah, I just, you know, like in New Jersey, I just looked at the bill. It's number 4649 in the state of New Jersey. What I really, I don't raise any money. It doesn't cost me any money to do this, and I have an organization website, and what I would love are just letters of stories from people that are experiencing isolation to email them to me, because I give every single letter to these legislators, and then they take them to the House and they take them to the Senate, and we produce all of these letters so that they can read them and understand what's going on, especially like in New Jersey. I would love to have other stories from people in New Jersey experiencing what I went through, so that I can give them to the legislators. That would help me a lot, you know. I have so many, but I would love more.
And how would you prefer they contact you?
You know, if they just go to my website at www.catherinefalkorganization.org, there's a link in there where you can write your name, you can write your story, and then it goes right into my email, and I receive all of the stories that way. They can just, email it right to me.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for coming on, Catherine.
Thank you for having me.
And support and blessings to you in this fight. It's a noble fight, and it's a fight that will help many, many families keep those connections in those closing days. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye, Catherine.
Okay.
And thank
bye.
You to all
thank
of you.
You
thank you to all of you for tuning in. What a wonderful example of the scripture that says something that was so bad and it's turned around for good, for a good cause. So God bless each and every one of you for tuning in. Go with God and be blessed. Thank you. Oh, I forgot to tell you all, tomorrow, Gavin McLeod, the Love Boat Captain, will be on the show. So tune in tomorrow, 10 a.m.